nothing stays the same. For some 50 years, and I can't believe I'm saying that, curiosity, and I'd say probably outright obsessiveness, has kept me going down all these different paths and exploring food. Well, now I find myself wanting to follow some new paths, and that's led to a tough decision. I'm going to be retiring at the end of the year. Now, mind you, I've been lucky. I have gotten to wear a lot of hats in the food world. But nothing has surpassed these two decades with the Splendid Table. I have had the best gig in the business, and that gig isn't going anywhere. You're going to continue to hear me throughout the year, but you're also going to hear more and more of our new host, someone that I brought into the fold some 6 years ago. First as a guest, and then as a contributor. I'm talking about Francis Lamb. Now, Francis is an award-winning food writer. He was staff writer for Gourmet and an editor at Salon, and you've seen his articles in the New York Times Sunday magazine. He's been a judge on Top Chef Masters, and he's a cookbook editor at Clarkson Potter. He's working with some great talents like Chrissy Teigen and Questlove, and he can cook. He graduated first in his class from the Culinary Institute of America, and I have him with me today. Francis, good to have you with us.
Hey, Lynn. Thank you so much. It's incredible to be here.
Are you blushing?
I am. Thankfully, we're on the radio and not on TV. Makeup. Quick makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Bring on that powder puff fast. Get the makeup on. So where did this whole thing with food come from for you?
Man, you know, it's funny because it's a stupid way to answer the question, but food has always been important to me. It's a stupid way to answer a question because, of course, food is important to everyone. It's the central thing in everyone's life. But when I say that, I mean going back to when I was a kid. It was tied pretty early to, like, some deep-seated emotional things and, like, you know, acceptance and reward from my parents and things like that. Maybe the quickest way to put it is, so my parents were the kind of parents who did not shy about telling me in a loving way, in a kind-hearted and well-meaning way, that, you know, I wasn't quite as good at this as my cousin, and I wasn't quite as good playing the piano as my brother,
Oh,
and you can't do this as well. And, you know, they always meant in a sort of encouraging way, but, you know, for a little kid, all you hear is, wow, you're not as good as other kids. But the one thing that they would say about me to their friends and family with, you know, real pride that really meant something was, oh, well, Francis really knows how to eat. And it sounds like a joke, but they really meant it. And they meant it because, you know, I would be at a table. So my family's Chinese and you know, food is important in our culture and it's a signifier of many things. But I remember being at a table in Hong Kong visiting family and I sat with the grown-ups. I was a little kid, and there was a kid's table, and they were having, like, you know, sweet and sour pork and fried rice or whatever.
Right, tasty,
I'm sure. But, you know, I sat at the grown-up table with the grown-ups, and when the steamed fish came, the whole fish, I picked the cheeks out of the head and ate those. And that's when my parents said, well, Francis really knows how to eat. And all the other grown-ups at the table were like, oh. And that was, like, the first time I heard them say something that wasn't, like, oh, you're not as smart as your cousin Albert.
Yeah, I had only one cousin that happened with, but my gosh, she was perfect at everything that I was rotten at. but especially in the Chinese culture, right? Food is terribly important on a lot of levels.
Sure, yeah. And, you know, obviously that it's central in every, I mean, you could probably make an argument that most cultures developed as a way around, you know, providing food for the people in that society in one way or the other.
Yeah.
I think in the Chinese culture in particular, you know, I can't make too blanket a statement because I don't, you know, I'm a scholar of these things. I only lived what I lived and I can speak to my experience, but I know that in my family, for instance, you know, we always sat down to dinner every night. My parents worked in New York City. I grew up in New Jersey. They came home pretty late, often like 9:30 at night.
Right.
But even as a kid, we would wait for dinner time and we would sit down together as a family and we would have dinner every single night at the table. And I always found that in my family too, like, you know, we weren't always the most communicative family. Like, we didn't always talk about our feelings, and we didn't talk about, you know, what we were thinking about the world necessarily, but we could always talk about what we were eating.
Do you think that coming from, you know, an immigrant family, because you write a great deal about people who haven't become famous, people who maybe would not have been gotten attention for what they do. And do you think maybe there's sort of a hypersensitivity to that? Because being the child of an immigrant family, you're on the outside a bit, looking in.
Yeah. I mean, well, thank you so much for saying that and for seeing that in my work. I mean, I try not to be that explicit about it when I'm writing, but I do think often as a writer and as an editor and in all the ways that I've you know, had the fortune of working in food media one way or the other, I do lots of things. I'm interested in lots of different things, but in a lot of ways I kind of feel like my highest calling is to help tell the stories of invisible people. And whether that be because of their, you know, because they're new to where they live now, or, you know, because they're cooks and they're not high-profile chefs and they're kind of stuck in the back of the restaurant, or, you know, what, because they live in a neighborhood that, or in a town or in a part of the country that other people aren't necessarily, you know, that interested in going to, whatever the case may be. But I feel like food is a way of bringing the stories of invisible people to light in a way that allows us all to sort of learn to see them. And for me, I think it's about honoring the essential fact of all of our common humanity.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And it's one of the things that first drew me to your writing. You know, I was a fan before you and I ever spoke to each other.
Thank you.
But something else, you're a new dad, right?
Yeah.
Now is it's a little girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is she really the, you know, the present center of the universe, or is this can you stand back and see that she's yet another baby?
I mean, you kind of have to, and you kind of know. Well, it's funny because I figured out early on that every single cliche about parenthood is true.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you go into thinking like, oh, well, like, you hear all these things, and it's all like, you know, like greeting card stuff. It's not going to be real. Like, our relationship, our baby, and like, no, everything is like, oh, you're going to miss it before you know it. Check. She goes up so fast. Check. You know, like every single thing is like, heard that before. Turns out that's real.
Right.
So on some level, you do realize, wow, my baby is just another baby, and I am just another dad, and my wife is just another mom, and like, we're all kind of living the same story as everyone else.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's like, wow, there is, you know, I work, my wife works, you know, we don't get to spend all day with her.
Uh-huh.
We spend, you know, time in the morning, and then we have to drop her off at her daycare. You know, we come and get her back after work, and then, you know, pretty soon it's bedtime for her, and that's it. So we really only spend a few hours a day with her, and some of those hours are really challenging. But then, like, the moment she goes to bed, you just turn around and be like, God, I miss her already.
You're in love. You're in love.
Yeah,
hey, when you're not into food and you're not, you know, a dad, what are the other passions?
Man, you know, it's funny because I think when you are a new parent, it's hard to see much else. But when I look back to like simpler times, I've always been super, super into music of all kinds. I used to think I wanted to work in music. I was a terrible musician from the beginning. I knew that. But I used to think I maybe wanted to work in the record industry and work with bands. I was so excited by that creativity and by all the emotions that music can drive in you. The music that heightens whatever emotion you're feeling, or the music that can change the emotion you're feeling, or the music that can just totally create a sense or a feeling in you that you didn't even realize you were, like, you know, ready to feel. I've always thought that's such an incredibly powerful thing. And I love sports. I I've been a fan of most every major sport at one point in my life, but I'm like a serial sports monogamist. Like, I went through like my serious baseball phase when I was a kid, and then I went through a serious basketball phase when I was a little older, and then went through a hockey phase, and I landed on football about 20 years ago, and haven't walked away from football. But it's like, you know, it's a rocky relationship. It's a complicated relationship.
Yeah, that's one relationship I've managed to avoid, but I'm fanatical about enough other stuff. Okay, Francis, I really am looking forward to hearing your take. What do you want to do with the show?
Oh, man. I mean, I've got a bunch of little ideas that have been sort of swirling in my head, and I'm sure some will take root and grow into ideas that we'll want to experiment with, and some will, you know, just kind of remain there. But I think the way I want to answer this now is I know one thing. I know that this show has been so fantastic and so beloved for so long, and there are lots of reasons for that, but in my mind, the key reason for it is certainly your curiosity and the different kinds of subjects and the broad range of subjects the show touches on. But every time I listen to it, Lynn, I feel such an incredible sense of your generosity of spirit. And I feel such a sense of your want, your desire to share. And whether that be share this super interesting thing you started thinking about, or share this really curious question you wanted your guest to talk to you about and teach you about, or share the knowledge you have with all the listeners who are calling and writing and asking questions. Every time I hear you on this show, I get such a strong feeling of generosity of spirit. And for me, I think the best thing I can do is to keep listeners feeling that feeling that there is a generosity of spirit behind the show. And it's not a one-person show.
Not at all.
I always knew that, yeah, sort of a little bit.
Not at all.
And I'm learning that more and more. And it's the whole team, and it's the listeners. Mm. It's everyone. It's a little community that pipes up in your headphones.
Oh, that's right. And there's so much more to be explored. And I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm really looking forward to listening and to finding out where you're going to take us. Mm. Francis, I wish you the very best, and I am so glad that you're going to be doing this.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you've done.
You're welcome, but I'm blushing.
Make up!
That's Francis Lamb, our new host here at The Splendid Table. Now you can hear more of our conversation and learn a lot more about Francis by heading to the website, splendidtable.org. He's going to be really dynamite.